Hey, we're going to look at the idea of testing versus temptation and what that is. And that actually has been touched on already. Rick touched on it this morning a little bit about the idea, the difference between testing and temptation, which is much about what I was going to look at as well. And we'll talk a little bit about that. This was also one of those sessions where I was asked to address some particular subjects that had to do with sexual purity, the idea of how do you make decisions when you're looking at issues. There were several things that I was asked to talk about that I wasn't quite sure how to deal with. So, for instance, like tattooing. Well, how do I feel about tattooing? Well, I don't have any. I guess that tells you how I feel about it. But where do we go from there? What about people that do have tattoos? Well, there are people that have tattoos that are great Christians, right? So what I decided to do is try to set up a format for us to think through issues in our lives so that you can kind of say, well, okay, I'm not exactly sure what this teaches, but here's a format. If I kind of follow this thinking, maybe I can come up with a decision personally that I can live with and feel comfortable with and defend. I feel good about what I believe. So that's kind of where we're going today. And I've kind of rearranged things because Tuesday I knew I was stirring a nest of wasps, and with my subject, I knew that ahead of time. There is the possibility that I may stir it again today. Maybe not. You may just see it and think, oh, that's kind of an interesting thing. But we ran out of time Tuesday, so I'm going to skip some stuff, and if we have extra time, we'll come back to it and try to get this other stuff in the way so you can see what's going on. But let's do start with our meditation for today. From 1 Peter 2, 2 through 3, like newborn babies, crave pure spiritual milk so that by it you may grow up in your salvation. Now that you have tasted that the Lord is good. And the question is, how does the goodness of the Lord satisfy your cravings? Or how has the goodness of the Lord satisfied you? So take a moment or two and jot down some ideas about that topic for yourself, and then we'll maybe share a couple of those. How has the goodness of the Lord satisfied you? Yeah.
For the most part, I'm not very satisfied because I have high expectations, I guess. But one area is that I have hope for a better life after this one.
Okay.
Or just give me death.
Okay, a hope for a better life. That's he struggles with a lot of other things in this life, but he has a hope for a better life through the Lord. Yes.
The Lord supplies all of my needs.
Okay, a feeling that he supplies our needs, all of our needs.
Everything I need.
Okay, he doesn't supply everything she wants, but he does supplies all that she needs. Yes. Okay, his forgiveness when we fail. Okay, a reason for our being, a background for who we are, where we came from. Okay, a leading to repentance. The meeting has provided several things for Glenn to glorify God with, people helping to work on the van, places to stay, all providence of God getting here. My providence of God story that I personally love, and I love Rick's explanation for it, looking at that, because that is a tricky area. But I had a van that was making some noises one year, and we were going to Eminence, to the camp out. And we were going down there and come up this, there's a really long, steep Ozark Hill. You go up to the top of this hill and you turn right and you got about a mile or half a mile down to the campground. Got up to the top of that hill and turn the corner and there's a just terrible noise. Just terrible noise. And I'm pulling my trailer and we got people there and we're ready to go. And I go on down and we pull in and I find the camp spot. I pull in the camp spot, put it in reverse to back in, and it quits. I mean, nothing. I just put it in any gear you wanted to, and I just stayed in the same spot. I'd lost one of the drives up in the front. But it was right there. I mean, we just unhooked my trailer, and we backed the trailer up into the spot with help, and somebody came out and towed the car away and fixed it. But we got it all the way there. It was just a marvelous thing. Providence of God, well, it sure beats having to walk 14 miles up and down the Ozark Hills to find somebody to work on it. So, for me, that's the providence of God. Thank you very much for getting me here. Dale.
It's been said before that man needs three things to truly be satisfied. He needs someone to love, something to do, and something to look forward to. I think the Lord provides all three of those things by giving us that love so that we might love Him back. I think He gives us something to do by living for Him and being the example, and something to look forward to, as mentioned before, of being with Him in heaven for eternity. I think all man craves those three things, and He can supply those things.
That's good. I hadn't heard that, but I like that. The idea that we need three things. Someone to love, something to do, and
something to look forward to.
And the Lord supplies areas, all three of those areas for us through His love and mercy to us. Okay, that's great. Thank you. I want to move to this one just real quickly. Instead of taking some time to do this, I want to move. Rick already mentioned about temptation and testing. Essentially, temptation is Satan's hope for our failure. That's what he's there for. And testing is God's hope for our growth. And I think those are the difference. And sometimes that difference is a little blurred for us. But a worldly example that is easy for me to see is two classes I had in college when I was going for my master's. One of them was general psych. And the guy who came in to do the general psych class, he brought this huge binder. It was about that thick. He called them his extemporaneous notes. And he would bring it in, he'd lay it down on the desk, look up at the class and open it up, and wherever it fell, that's what he taught for the day. That was it. The next day, next class, he'd come up with the same thing, set it up there and let it fall open, and that's what he taught for that day. He never knew where the guy was going. And then we came to the final, and his final was, you have a daughter that would like to play the piano, what things would you consider? That was the only test we had and the only question on the final. Now that was temptation. He was wanting us to fail. He didn't have any interest in trying to instruct us and help us understand anything. He just wanted us to fail. He didn't care. On the other hand, I had another class called Group Process. And that was a fabulous class. Much more challenging than the other class, because he had you write a personal paper. And then he had you defend it personally with him. Not so he could knock you down, but he wanted to see, what did you believe? And he challenged you. And then you came into his class and he said, what do you think you ought to get, an A or a B in my class? And why? Now, I learned a lot from that man. Mal was his name. I don't even remember who the general psych guy was. But I learned a lot from that man, because he showed an interest in my growth. And I think a lot of the situations that we have in our life fall in those two categories if we have the opportunity to think about them. Is this trying to get me to grow? Is this for my betterment? Or is someone trying to drag me under? And then I can make a decision about how to attack it. And we'll talk a little more about that later. What I want to go to is this topic in particular. Successful testing requires successful relationships. And I want to talk about that in the sense of several ways of us looking at things, not only in boy-girl relationships, but also in husband-wife relationships, and in a sense of how do we pull together as a body? I mean, because we come in from our different places, having had different experiences, and then we come into this building, and we try to mold something together here. How does that all happen? What needs to go through to make this relationship successful? So that's what we're going to be looking at today. And we're going to start, I'm going to skip a spot, and we're going to go down to the six P's of analyzing our test. Because understanding where we're coming from will help us in building our relationships and our decisions about what's going on. So, and this is going to probably be a departure for me. It's going to be a lot lecture, and I hope we can keep up with that. First of all is the idea of precept. The precept is a command, what someone likes, what someone doesn't like, and it's for a specific situation. For instance, for the 14th year in a row, your great-grandma has sent you flannel pajamas. And your mom insists that you write a thank you card. Okay, that is a precept. It is a command. Write a thank you card. That's just what you do. Regardless of what it is, you do it because mama says so. Okay? Now, there is a principle involved here, and the principle is the rule or standard that may be applied to more than one type of situation. What mom is trying to do is teach you how to be polite, be considerate. That's the principle that she's going off of to establish the precept. And sometimes these are a little confusing. For instance, my grandson, who's 3 and a half, just taught my daughter a lesson in this, that he understands the precept and not the principle. In their household, there is a rule that you don't use the word stupid. You just don't use that word in their household. Well, my daughter Christy was working on some decoration in her kitchen, and she had done something, and she turned to her husband Greg and said, "That just looks stupid, doesn't it?" Well, in runs Stephen. "Mommy, you are not to use the word stupid. Go to your bedroom and sit on your bed and think about what's going on." So away Mommy walks to her bedroom to sit and contemplate what she had done. Okay, and finally he comes in and asks her, "Do you know why you're sitting in here?" Okay, he has the precept down. He knows what the rule is. It's don't use the word stupid. He doesn't know what the principle, he didn't know the global idea of what she was trying to do there. And then the rest of the afternoon he spent trying to get her to say stupid again because he thought it was great sitting his mom to the bedroom. But you get the idea. We get on to the precept, and then we get sometimes narrowly focused and we forget about the principle. The principle is, what is the larger picture here and underneath our precept? And then the third thing in these P's are the person. And in this case, what we're talking about is it points to the person of God. How do these principles and precepts show a part of who God is? How's that relationship working? In this case, if we go back to the flannel pajamas, and mom was trying, that's the precept was write a thank you note, and the principle is because it is polite, then the person is pointing to mom's courtesy, mom's consideration. That's the reason she's so involved in this. In a little bit, you'll see how this works with God as we take an example of sexual purity and look how all this fits together. Now, the reason for establishing a precept, principle, and a person is to show that there are several things happen. First of all, if we follow those three things, understand them, it will protect us from things in life. It will keep us from getting into trouble. And at the same time, it will also provide some things for us. It will provide happiness. It will provide safety. It will provide other things for us. And then finally, and not necessarily most importantly, but the most difficult, is how do I then take those ideas and make an application to my life, my family? And that's what we want to work on. Okay? Now, those are the six P's in analyzing situations. And in just a minute, I'm going to show you how to do that with the subject of sexual purity, which you have in front of you. So you can see how this kind of works together. And I'll tell you, this is not my work. This is somebody else's work, and I'll tell you more about that in just a little bit. I just happen to think it's very good. Any questions or comments on that before I go on? I mean, it's kind of an overview, and you don't really have much sense for it, but... Okay? Well, let's look at this next one then. The precept. This is the example of sexual purity, because that was one of the things that was asked me about. What do we do? How do we teach kids about maintaining their sexual purity? How is that important in all of the decisions they have to make? And the reason this is so important, I think, is because you can teach so much and you can hover over people and keep them in the right way. But at some point, you will not be there in the back seat whispering in their ear, and they have to make the decision on their own. Do they have the information that they're going to make good decisions? Well, if they've never had to think about it for themselves, then your input is going to be negated and put out the door because you're not there whispering in their ear anymore. So having the ability to make these decisions ahead of time is going to be important, and that's where the application comes in. How am I going to put these things into their heads so that they can make good decisions? So the precept is sexual purity. And if you look at those passages for sexual immorality, we find these kinds of things. And we'll take the time to read them in the interest of our time. It says to abstain, to flee, to do not commit, to be no hint of that, to put to death, and to avoid sexual immorality. I mean, those are pretty specific and pretty straightforward. No, there's not much slide one way or the other to get around it. It just says this is what it's supposed to be. These are the rules. Do them. So what is the principle then? Well, the principle is a standard of love. Remember, the principle is the big umbrella, so that it applies in a variety of situations. If I love people truly, then I will flee and abstain from sexual immorality. If I have a sense of purity, then it transfers into those precepts. If I understand that faithfulness is important in my relationship, then those precepts make sense for this principle. And it points to the person of God, because God ultimately is a God of love. God is a God who is pure. He is a God of faithfulness. So those principles and precepts tell us something about God in our lives. It is consistent with God, with what God would have us believe about Him. He wants us to know and believe that He is a God of love. And He does that by setting forth some principles and some precepts. That He is a God of purity. And He does that also. Now, this is where it's important to understand a little bit about what happens. First of all, it protects us from a variety of things. If we maintain our sexual purity, then we will be protected from guilt when we come into a relationship, or just our own personal guilt if we get into sexual immorality. So if we follow the precept, we can be saved from guilt. Well, that's a nice thing. We also can save ourselves from unplanned pregnancies. In 1994 or 95, when this information was given to me, 2,795 teenage girls become pregnant every day in the United States. 2,795 teenage girls every day. Out of those, 1,106 of those girls have an abortion. Every day. Maintaining the principles and precepts keeps you from unplanned pregnancies and decisions you have to make. That's what it will protect you from. It will protect you from STDs, sexually transmitted diseases. Not a topic that we even thought about or cared to discuss when I was growing up, but one that is necessary to talk about today. In 1995, there were 25 known sexually transmitted diseases, 20 of which could not be prevented by any kind of contraceptives. 25 known, 20 of them not preventable with contraceptives or condoms. And those were diseases that were lifelong diseases. You never got rid of them. You could make them go away for a while, but then they'd come back. And that's our society today. And young people need to know that up front. You need to know that there is no such thing as safe sex. That is a misnomer. And if you follow the principles and precepts that God has laid down, He will protect you from those things. He'll protect you from sexual insecurity or comparison when you get married or move into another relationship. Wondering, I wonder how I measure up. I wonder what they're thinking about. It keeps you from that. And it keeps you from this emotional distress or suspicion or stress or even suicide from those decisions that you made. That's what following the principles and precepts will protect you from. It will also provide you some things. It'll provide you spiritual rewards because God blesses the marriage bed when it's holy. That's His promise to you. That's a benefit. It provides a healthier childhood for rearing. You have a lot fewer questions to answer when your children say, "And were you a virgin when you got married?" Well, no, and this is what happened. It keeps you from having to make those kinds of explanations. It provides a peace of mind in your own relationship. You don't have to worry what the other person in your relationship is bringing in. What kind of baggage? I don't know if the evangelists are noticing that too, but that's something that as you begin to talk with people who are looking at being married, who have not been in the church, have not been faithful, that is an issue now you need to talk to them about. Have you thought about having both of you tested to see if there are any sexually transmitted diseases that you need to be aware of, because it now will affect your relationship. Praise the Lord that all of that has been forgiven, but the consequences are still there, and you still need to deal with them. It provides for a trust in our character. It provides for a true intimacy because you have been there. Now, the important thing then is application. And this is something that I think we haven't done a good job. This is something I didn't do a good job with because I didn't really know to do a good job with it. And that is, we need to find ways that we can make these applications to our young people, to our children as we're growing up. And there are several ways that we might do that, and these are listed as several. For instance, on our anniversaries as parents, why don't we make it a family celebration of our purity before God? Be sure and pull that theme into our celebration, that we are celebrating X numbers of years of marriage, and ain't it good that God has given us our purity within our relationship, and we've got that. Focus on it. Go to weddings as a family thing, not just as a mommy thing, because she wants to see all that's going on. It becomes a family thing, a celebration of two people who have done what they're supposed to do in God's plan. And celebrate that with your children. Let them know that this is valuable, important to you. so that they can begin making that decision. And talk about the language, the news, the TV. Use those resources. If you're watching a television program and something comes on, then's the time to say, did you hear that? Did you hear what they just said? I wonder what's wrong with that. Do you have an idea of what's wrong? For instance, a story was told of a man who had purposely took his children to Schindler's List. It's a movie about one man who saved, I can't remember exactly the number, 1,000 Jews or 2,000? Someone that's seen that can remember? Remember? I can't remember what the number was. An amazing amount of number for one man who spirited out Jews in the middle of Germany. One man who made a decision. But he, when they got finished, he asked his kids, was it wrong for the Germans to kill all those people? And they said, yes, but why? Why? Well, just wrong? Well, okay, but in their culture it wasn't wrong. And we say that a lot, don't we? We go to places, well, it's their culture, so it's okay in their culture. Well, it was okay in the German culture to kill those people. What is the principle that we want to look at? What's the principle that's guiding God's wanting us to value life? And use those opportunities to talk to us, talk to your children about what's going on. Now, I said all that, and this is a book that I think every parent should have. This is one of those resources. You should have your Bibles and you should read those, and that's all valuable. But this is a parent, this is a resource every parent needs to have. It's Josh McDowell's book, Right from Wrong. And a lot of what I just did was take one of his little sections, and he covers a whole range of principles, things that we need to look at as parents and how to teach them. And the reason he wrote this book in 1994, they took a survey of 3,000 plus kids from 13 denominations who were just coming from a church camp. So these were kids who had some idea that God was important somehow in their life. And what he discovered was appalling about what teens believe. Churched teens believe. 50% of them thought having sexual relations before marriage was okay if you loved the person. And this was a wide range of people. And he talks about it, and he does it by weaving a couple of stories together and giving you information. The first part of it is information about like this, about looking at certain ideas and trying to fit those out. And the last part, if you're into what the actual survey was and what the questions were and what the percentages of, I mean, they break it all down and all that demographics kind of stuff and give you all the figures and all that kind of stuff. But it's a good book. And as a parent, you need to read it. If you want to make sure that your child is going to believe what you think is vitally important. Because they don't, as someone already mentioned, John mentioned earlier, they don't happen. It just doesn't happen automatically. You really have to work at it. Okay. Another break point before I go to the next thing. Comments, questions, disagreements on this before I move on. Yes.
Well, Rebecca and I never teach practically everything necessary about disorder, and we use the Bible.
Yeah, and the Bible is a great source for that. And you notice that in the beginning, that's what we looked at. Understanding the precepts, the principles, and the person is critical to understanding that comes by God. And then finding the practical applications in our lives is the important thing. Yes?
A young couple wants to upset me, invite me to your wedding, but don't invite my children.
Okay. There we are. You want to upset him, invite him, but not his children. And we understand why people do that, but if we get back to the idea of thinking this should be a celebration, then we'll begin looking at it differently. I went to a wedding one time, a very good friend of mine, that decided, well, she was going to, in fact, she's a principal now in a school, she wanted children. And so she said, invite the children, have them all in here. And in fact, she had, what, eight couples maybe of kids dressed up in tuxedos and a little bride's outfits that walked down in front of her. And they stayed on the platform the entire marriage ceremony. And but these are kids that they're this tall. Now you can already begin thinking about this. Little kids this tall stand up here on a platform for a half an hour. They're all going to pay attention, right? They weren't paying attention, but it didn't deter anybody from getting the marriage ceremony done. But it was a celebration. One little kid found out there was a hollow spot. Man, if you stomped on that thing just right, it made a different noise than if you stomped over here. It was just great. And he just went to town finding the different sounds you could find on that stage. And one kid found out if you turn around and looked underneath your legs, people look different. But it never upset this couple because they knew what they were getting into when they started, and they just invited them all up and had a great time. It was a family celebration. And I think that's good for us to think about. If we're going to say these are important issues, then we need to also include them in all parts of our life. Okay, the next thing, I need some help passing stuff out. Oh, okay, let me pass these out, if you would. Would you start at the back and start with the teens, because I want to make sure the teens have them. Comment. Yes. Okay, taking her daughters to weddings didn't take long for the daughters to ask, why does the bride always wear white? So as a natural segue into purity. I mean, see, it works, folks. It is there if we take the opportunity to teach it, and I think it's so critical if this is going to be important to us. Yes. You mean just in a dating kind of relationship? Okay, he was asking about, have we talked about in a dating relationship, if we have an experienced person, sexually experienced person, and someone who is a virgin, and how does that play? And have we talked about that? And no, we haven't. And that is a particular problem, as we'll see here in just a little bit with my next series of things I want to talk about. Is our areas of relationships and where we get to. A person who is experienced sexually will want more from you if you are a virgin. They just will, because they have more experience. Yeah, absolutely. It will, regardless of whether we're talking about male or female, it will work that way. The papers you have don't have anything on them, but they relate to the list that you're going to see that's in your book about building a relationship to stand the test of time and purity. It has those 12 things listed. These relate to that. I do it both ways because sometimes it's easier to think about it visually by having a little picture in front of you rather than just the words. So now you have both. And if you want to make paper airplanes out of them, you can later. But for the moment, this is a series of steps in a relationship that was done by people who are not Christians in the middle of Tennessee. And they just analyzed relationships, all kinds of relationships, to see what kind of steps they take and where do things break down sometimes. You know, why do some relationships just seem to work and some don't seem to work? What goes on? And so they begin seeing some common things. Now, this is going to have several applications. One, it's going to have an application for teenagers who are dating. For some of you that are having a good time and finding out the opposite sex right now, this is going to have information for you about where your relationship is going and how fast it should go. This is going to have application to people who are married, because you'll see as we get through this that if you skip a bunch of steps, even if you've been married for 30 years, then it creates problems. and it's also going to be good for us as a body. When we come together, there are things that need to take place in order for us to have a relationship with each other. And of course, they'll stop at different stages, and you'll see that as we go. Okay, the first one is simply eye to body. What happens is, in the beginning of a relationship, the first thing we do is notice the person. The old song, walking down the street, pass me by and turn around and look, that's it. The first thing we notice is the body. That's part of what God made us for. So we look at that person and make a decision. Do I want to talk to that person or not? And it's strictly based upon what it looks like. What it looks like. Now, that can change, but you'll see as we go along what happens. Then the next thing we do is we have an eye to eye. This kind of goes like, oh, I really like that person. I wonder if they'd like to talk to me. So I kind of look at them. And if they look at me, I'll look away real fast. And I'll look and see if they're looking again. And then I'll look away again. That's the eye to eye. Until our eyes catch and there's some kind of a recognition that says, hey, we may be able to go a little further than this, or it may be hit the road, Joe. We're out of here. So you gotta decide what's going on, and that's where the next step comes in. Mouth to mouth, which is our talking. Lip to lip. What does it say?
Voice to voice.
Voice to voice. Okay. Let me try to keep up here. That if I had done that, I'd known exactly what it was. Voice to voice, which is our introduction, and it begins on a very, hello, my name is Dan, and you are, and you're from. We try to get information. We find out what we have in common. We see what's going on. What do they like? What are they don't like? Can we have a conversation, or is it going to be 2 hours of sitting, looking around, trying to think of something to say next? It's voice to voice. What happens? Well, generally then, after we've done that, there's a period then where you begin holding hands. There's the touch. Hand to hand. And that's pretty innocent, and that's acceptable in our culture. You reach down and hold hands. That doesn't mean that you're committed for life to the person. It just means that after you've talked with them for a while, there may be something here, so I'd like a little physical contact. And so we hold hands. You move on to the next one, hand to shoulder. And again, this is an important step because at this point the relationship changes. And whatever's going on, the relationship changes. Because this, before, hand-to-hand has just been real friendly. You take a hand to walk across the street just out of friendliness sometimes. This is friendly. Now hand-to-hand, hand-to-shoulder means a little more. It means that I'm really pretty much interested in you. Now, I don't know exactly how much yet, but I want to draw you a little closer to me. Now, we're both still facing forward, so that means we've got some options. But you're now much closer to me than you were before. And I have announced my territory. It's here. This is mine. Different from holding hands, this is mine. That's why I said it changes at this point. We don't think about it, but it does. The next one, hand to waist, is even more intimate. I move my hand from the shoulder down to that person's waist, and I also pull them closer. If I'm shoulder to shoulder with somebody, hand to shoulder, we can still kind of walk, and there can be a distance between us, but we got a closeness. But when I walk hand to waist with someone, their hips pulled up against mine. We've got a lot more physical touch than we've had before. And that means more. Again, there's that sense of drawing people in, making a claim, showing that we have something going on. Now, before I go on to the next one, what happens with these is that regardless of whatever step you get to, you don't want to go back to the step previous. This is the problem with building a relationship. If you look at eye to eye, voice to voice, and jump right to hand to waist, You've lost part of the relationship building material. And there's not going to be as much to go on when you jump that. And especially when you see, if you jump further than that, which what happens in our society a lot today, you have a date, you go out, you find somebody, and you have sex with them that night. You've jumped long ways in building a relationship, and then you wonder why it doesn't work. Well, we can tell you why it doesn't work. Even scientifically now, we can tell you why it didn't work, because you didn't build a relationship. You got nothing to draw on. And so we look then at what happens next. Face to face, which means I turn and we begin getting very close. We spend some time together. I draw you in together. We spend a lot of time, a lot of dark time sometimes, face to face. Very intimate. We begin to learn about each other, about the things that make them laugh. We begin to develop our little jokes that they could have a look or a partial phrase and we know exactly what they mean. We build that relationship face to face. And then in that, a natural outgrowth of that is the hand to hear. Touching, stroking someone's hair is a very sensual experience. And you can prove that in your mind just by thinking about going up and stroking someone of the opposite sex, stroking their hair. Would that be well received? That'd make a lot of people real uncomfortable. And that's because it's a very sensual move. And when you do that, again, that's a relationship building thing. And again, what's happening, once you reach that stage, you don't want to go back to the other ones. You want to move up in this relationship scenario here. And that's what the problem is. Going slow enough to build in all these things is so critically important to understand a relationship and maintain its purity. And I know it's difficult for teens, because I can remember being a teen and I can remember sitting in the back of these, because they said they've been going on 30 years, so you know I'm that old. They talk about going on back there, sitting back in the back with my arm around the girl of my choice for that 2-week meeting. You want that physical contact. The problem is, folks, is that if you go too fast, you really have no relationship except physical. And it doesn't last and it doesn't stay pure. That's why you need to make sure that you work slowly through these things. Hand to body means that you begin to explore the other person's body with your hand. That becomes outside the clothes, but you explore. You find all of its crevices, its nuances. You begin to know what the other person is like. And in our society, we say that's okay. You hear a lot of teen magazines will tell you it's not a problem. And I'm telling you, it's a problem, folks. Because if you get to that step, you don't want to go back to holding hands. You want to be at that step or better. And if you don't take the time to keep your relationship pure, you'll have problems. The next was then, of course, number 10, hand above waist, underneath the clothes, fondling one another. On this, and then we'll have some time for some comments or feedback. In any relationship, it takes time to work through this. Young people, this is the way your relationship works. It sounds a little hokey when you put it in 12 steps, but if you'll think about it, and I can already see there are some that in the last 3 days have moved from hand holding to hand to shoulder and hand to waist in 3 days. And I understand that. I'm not mocking it. It's great. But I'm asking you to think about where you're going and how fast are you going? Because every time you move up, you don't want to go back. Now, for married people, research says that one of the problems that stresses marriages, especially for men, is they don't have a sense that they need to kind of touch base with all of these with their mate before they have intercourse with them. When you go from, hi dear, how you doing, how's your day, back to the bedroom, it's a little stressful. They need some touch. They need some reassurance. And in our building, in our body as a congregation, we need to go through these first five or so. We need to touch base with people. We need to eye them up. We need to talk to them. We need to hold their hand and touch them. We need to put our shoulder around us and our arm up to their shoulder and say, hey, we're going the same direction. We're in this together. How you doing? Give that hug. That's okay. Because that's an important part of us. And if we don't have that kind of stuff, then our relationships are strained. Okay. Questions, comments? Exclamations, rebuttals? Yes. That is God's plan, that you will experience these pleasures. That's what He designed us for. What we're asking is to do it the right way, so that you maintain purity, so that you can have a relationship when you're married that's pure and you have no regrets. You have all those things that God will protect you from and all those things God will provide for you. Other things? Yeah. Let me go back. Yeah, kissing would be in number 7. Yeah. And that also would probably include making out, heavy petting, that whole area down in there, along with number 8, hand to hair. When you're in close embrace, one of the things we do is stroke the hair. Yeah. The question is my perception that young people are starting this a lot sooner? And yes. And part of that has to do not from church people necessarily, but from being a teacher of sixth graders. And knowing through the years that I have seen more and more troubles with kids falling apart in my classroom because now they're no longer going with somebody and they don't like them, or dressing so provocatively that we have to tell a sixth grade girl, you may not dress like that in school. They want it that's moving a lot faster and that's jumping from eye to body, I want to get your attention, to let's see if we can catch you around the back of the playground when the teachers aren't watching. Public display of affection, yeah, PDAs, that's right. And some places you still do. And we didn't get to this, so you can look at that. I was trying to, okay, I was just at there. Any other comments? Looks like I'm out of time. I'll be glad to talk to you about it again if you got questions one way or the other. And I'm sorry that I had to cram so much in one time. Thank you so much. You got 10 minutes. We'll see you back at 25 till.